WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. And boy, do we have a fun show planned for today. I don't know. Is anything ever fun when it comes to the market? Fun is usually the wrong word. We typically have a good time here on Money Matters, though. And we're going to talk about the lost decade of stocks. We've got the Equifax data breach of 143 million people in the world. Just assume that your credit and everything about you that is applicable for getting some sort of loan is out there in the hands of criminals. WSB and Clark Howard doing an entire special on this. I've written about it, but I've talked to Clark and his team several times about it. Stay tuned for what Clark says. And then we have another, and buried beneath all of this, you've got another missile launch this week from North Korea. North Korea will not stop. I don't know if we just have to go in and obliterate them before they stop with their rhetoric. They're going to what? They're going to turn us and the Japanese into ashes? Who says that about the United States without repercussion? And you get all of this in a week. And by the way, right after Irma, which one of the days the market was up this week was, oh, well, the Irma wasn't as bad as we thought. Might only cost $55 billion. So it's amazing to me that Harvey wreaks havoc, Irma wreaks havoc, and here we are in a world with the most ridiculous dictator arguably in the history of the world, continuing to make threats with atomic or nuclear-oriented weapons to our survival, and we have the Dow Jones up one of the biggest weeks we've seen all year. Isn't that confusing to you as an investor? There is no happy talk or good news except for when it comes to equity markets. So here we are in a week where oil goes back up to $50. North Korea wants to, quote, sink Japan, fired another missile over the country, and reduced the U.S. mainland to ashes and darkness. And Irma costs another $55 billion as a hurricane. And here we are with markets up. For the week, Dow Jones up 2.1%, S&P 500 up 1.58%. And the market, or the bull market, continues to forge on. I went back and let me just for a brief minute talk about the Equifax data breach. This is where this is exactly where you turn to Clark Howard and his team. I've called Krista D and his team five times this week. I wanted to make sure I knew exactly what we were doing here. This is Clark's specialty. This is exactly what the Clark Howard team does and the Consumer Action Center does. And the final synthesis on all of this, and you've probably already heard this before, goes back to three very simple things. One, you've got to freeze your credit, particularly if you're not in the middle of getting a bunch of new credit. So if you're not in the process of trying to get a mortgage for a new house, or you're not going to buy three cars, or you have all the credit cards you already need, and you don't need new credit, or don't need a whole lot of new credit over the next X years, then it makes total sense to just freeze your credit and save yourself. And Clark has an entire guide called his How to Freeze Your Credit Guide on his website that is a wonderful resource. So that's where you want to go, Clark Howard's Credit Freeze Guide. Of course, you've got to monitor your credit and the transactions inside the digital financial world we live in. I do this through LifeLock. Clark, I don't know if he's a big fan of this because you do have to pay for it every month, but for $10 a month, I feel like it's worth it. I use LifeLock. I have for many years, mostly as over the years I've had clients that had used it 5, 8, 9 years ago that it really helped them. And it helped them avoid real trouble when it came to identity theft. So I heard so many good stories about LifeLock and, of course, 10,000 commercials, which sometimes actually lead me the other direction. I've been using it for many years. It's almost annoying how vigilant they are about your own transactions. Every single little thing that may be just out of the ordinary ever so slightly. You were at a gas station in Alabama, but not Georgia. You'll get a ping about it. You'll get a text. You'll get a voicemail. You'll get an email. They are all over you about anything that's happening that doesn't quite fit your normal algorithmic pattern. And it kind of forces you to go in and make sure this alert was not a big deal. And I've probably had 700 alerts from them in the last couple of years. Fortunately, they've been okay. But the fact that they really make sure you're going in there and you are assessing at what's happening inside of your accounts, whether it's a Bank of America or Charles Schwab or Fidelity account, it doesn't matter where the account is. They want you to make sure you're looking at it. So monitoring your credit, of course, you could just do this on your own by going in and making sure you're looking at each one of your accounts. But you could use a service like LifeLock. You can use a service like Credit Karma as well. And they do a lot of the same things LifeLock does. They don't have this big $1 million service guarantee. Don't confuse the service guaranteed with stolen fund guarantee, but they will pay up to $1 million, according to LifeLock, to use lawyers and specialists to help you get out of a credit theft scenario. So I like LifeLock. You could also use Credit Karma, which I actually use both. And then, so one, you freeze your credit. Two, you monitor your credit and all of your transactions in many ways. And then three, you need to just remain vigilant and understand that it's not the 1950s. We don't have passbook savings accounts anymore. We don't notate in a small little book about, I don't even know how many people, yes, some people still have an actual check ledger. I still see that. But 85% of the world is digital today. So you've got to go and make sure that your digital accounts are safe. And in order to remain vigilant, use less institutions. You don't need 17 bank accounts and five different brokerage firms. Choose one or two brokerage firms. Choose one or two banks. You're still going to have a lot of accounts if you're married. You, your wife has an account. You have an account. You have a joint account. You have an IRA. She has an IRA. You have a Roth account. She has a Roth account. You have custodial accounts. Even if you use one bank, it's confusing, let alone use four of them. So try to consolidate your financial life so you can get a handle of it, because that vigilance and that monitoring is really your safest bet against identity fraud. All right, let's talk about the rest of the scary world that we live in, one where North Korea wants to destroy us or turn us into ashes, and we're all trying to invest for retirement so that we don't have to work anymore, or we have financial independence. Sometimes it takes a tremendous, tremendous amount of patience. I would argue that today, that is certainly what we are experiencing. But I go back, and I'm doing an interview with Barron's this week, and they wanted to know about the early part of my career. So I sat down and I thought about this for a little bit, and I just went back and I looked at the market. So I started in the investment business in the 1990s, in the latter part of the 1990s. And if you're an investor and you remember around 1981, things started to really look up for U.S. equity markets. And we had this just tremendous bull market in the 1980s and the 1990s here in America. And if you think about all the technological change that was really coming to fruition in the 80s, and then of course in the 1990s, productivity, it was tremendous. The stock market was just on fire year after year after year. So long. We're talking about almost 20 full years of these massive gains year after year after year that investors got lulled to sleep. And we ended up creating what we all know now, of course, was that bubble that popped right after 1999. So I think of 1999 as the end of that massive bull market run. Of course, it was March of 2000 that the NASDAQ hit over 5,000, then crashed almost 80%. Well, the Dow and the S&P 500 did something similar, not quite as bad as the NASDAQ, but we're talking about almost 50% pullbacks. And then, of course, we recovered from that to some extent. Then we had the great financial crisis in 2007, 2008, and it happened again in even more dramatic fashion. But if you go back and you look at when I started, so I was a market investment advisor intern back in 1997. In 1998, I went full time, and I went back. You look at the summer of 1998. So look at June, July of 1998. This is what's fascinating to me. 5 years after I started in the business in the late 90s, 5 years later. Well, let me give you the initial level. When I started, the Dow was at 9,000. 9,000. Again, I went into an environment when as I was starting, everyone around me was rah, rah, rah. Markets only go straight up, and they do it all the time. 5 years later, into the business for me, the Dow was lower. 9,000, then now, 5 years later, 8,500. That's a half a decade. Markets actually, from an odometer reading, lower. We'll get to the income in a minute, but let's go through the headline numbers here. Then we go another 5 years. So the end of my 10th year in the stock market as a full-time investment professional. By the end of the 10th year, the Dow was still lower, 8,600, than when I started. An entire decade. Started at 9,000, 10 years later, 8,600. Talk about frustration. It was not until the 11th year as a full-time investor for me when markets started to break through and actually make new highs, make sustainable highs that we saw around 2009, mid-2009. It took all the way until July of 09, 11 years later, to get back to 9,000. Talk about what do you think that did to me as an investor, or what did it do to all of us during that period of time? First of all, I never lost faith in the power of the U.S. economy, and I never lost faith in, and I never lost belief that businesses in America and earnings in America. I never lost faith that earnings wouldn't continue to grow. It did test my patience. It was frustrating. I'm a human, and it absolutely tested my patience. But eventually, we came out of that. When we get back from a quick news weather traffic break, I'll tell you what that total return scenario looked like. Even though Dow did a round trip from 9,000, 11 years later hit 9,000 again. Do you think you made money during that period of time? Was it perfectly flat? What about the dividend? The answer to that. On the other side of quick news weather traffic. Stay tuned. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB.
Start the next week informed with Atlantis Morning News. Monday, the latest on North Korea, Irma recovery, and weather and traffic updates every 6 minutes on WSB and the WSB radio app.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I want to get to the answer of this question. Think about how fascinating this exercise is. Summer of 1998 to July or summer of 2009. It's exactly 11 years, and we are staying at the exact same number, meaning that we start when the Dow was at 9,000, and we finish the exercise when the Dow was at 9,000. The difference, 11 years. So, of course, mathematically, your capital appreciation, your rate of return is perfectly zero over that period of time. Bought a stock at 90, 10 years, 11 years later, it's at 90. Well, it didn't go anywhere. Didn't lose, didn't gain, just perfectly zero. But we're forgetting the dividend. So what was your total rate of return during that period of time? Well, if you take your dividends and you reinvest your dividends over that period of time, you actually made 31% over that 11-year period. Now, again, it's about as bad as you can find a long period of time in the U.S. stock market. And that's what makes this so important to understand. You still averaged 2.5% per annum in this exercise. The timing couldn't be worse. So the timing in my career couldn't have been more frustrating. Let's get started after everyone's rah-rah about the stock market for 20 years. And then we go for over a decade, we're headed nowhere. It really hit me over that period of time. One of the very few things that kept me sane and kept investors, their portfolios actually working for them, was the income. And this Dow example, for the 30 companies in the Dow, this is a perfect example of why income works. The dividend alone, in reinvesting, you instead of a 0% return, you had a 31% rate of return at 2.5% a year. So that's the very worst decade that you can, or one of the very worst periods of time you can find. How about bonds, though? Remember, balanced portfolios are going to include some fixed income or bonds. The aggregate bond index was up 87% during that period of time, average 5.85%. The investment grade bond index did 68% or 5% on average per year. The power, my friends, of income. Stay tuned. Money Matters returns. We'll take your calls 404-872-0750 right here, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters, WSB Radio. Wes Moss here every Sunday morning from 9 until 11 during Georgia football season, college football. We're here from 9 until 10 o'clock in the morning. Today is, of course, one of those days. So if you have calls or questions, let's do it now. Let's get those calls and questions in right now because we're going to go to the phones. The number here live in the studio is 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. As we talk about the world of income, how to make sure that your income continues. How do you make sure that you have income viability that's coming from stocks and from bonds and from closed-end funds and from REITs and from MLPs and from preferreds, all of the different areas that you get income from. How do you make sure you have income viability from those securities? So we're live in the studio. Happy to take your calls and questions. Again, 404-872-0750 is the number in the studio. If you are out of town in another state, Texas, California, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, we're easy to reach. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Again, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to Karen, who joins us on the line. Karen, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. What's going on? How can I help?
Thank you. I'm looking into guaranteed income annuities and trying to sift through all their caveats. I'm 58 years old and looking at starting the income when I'm 67. And I'm curious to know if you typically recommend COLAs, cost of living adjustments.
Well, of course. So let's talk a little bit about bigger picture what Karen's doing here. This guaranteed income annuity is a scenario where you agree to a certain amount, you put it down today. Effectively, then you are buying yourself an exact pension, if you will, that starts at a different age. In your case, in about 10 years, at age 67, and then there's a bell or whistle that you can also purchase on that same guaranteed income annuity that will also go up by, that would make it so that your payment would go up by either the rate of inflation or some sort of percentage of the rate of inflation. So first of all, the question is really, what does it cost? What is the extra cost of the COLA increase, number one? And then two, we've got to go back to the fundamental question of why are you doing the annuity in the first place? And I know it's because you want income, but beyond that, is it part of your overall income picture? How big of a portion of your future retirement income is coming from this one source? So I asked you like seven questions there. You can choose to pick one or two of them.
Probably about 50%.
About
50% of my income would be coming for that.
It's
a 2%. You know, basically the way I was looking at it, I wrote them all out year by year, and, you know, one has a 1% bonus. If I got that bonus every year, when would they catch up? And, you know, I think my concern is, it's not a concern, but my mother is in her 90s, and she's still going strong, so I do have longevity in my genes.
So what if you accidentally live a long time, right?
Right.
God forbid. And remember a couple of thoughts though on these annuities. Let me dig a little bit deeper. So let's say you've got, you obviously will have Social Security in your 60s. Mm-hmm. Do you have a pension too?
No.
Okay, so you don't have a pension.
So the only guaranteed thing I have is my Social Security.
So just social, got it. And then, so it sounds like of your investment dollars, so of the total pie you have to put to work in something to produce income, mm-hmm. are you saying about 50% of that is would be going into this annuity?
No, about 30%.
Which is probably the very most you want to do, and it sounds like you've thought that through. Of course, if you're going to if you look at a pie chart and you look at all of your investment money to do a third in any one thing, particularly a product like this, is definitely at the very maximum you want to do. So you're telling me, why are you doing an annuity in the first place? You're doing it so that you're just getting a set guaranteed rate of return on, or a set income amount from a portion of your assets. I'm with you on that one. Number two, and you know this, the annuity companies, I think there's this great thought that annuity companies have this special magic, like their annuity companies are wizards and they can figure out how to get you income forever, unlike you being able to do it on your own. They're not wizards. They're just they're just actuaries. And they're not investing in anything that is different or anything more unique than what you could invest in on your own. So big annuity companies, you give them $100,000. They say, oh, we're going to pay you $1,200 a month or whatever it is in 10 years or $2,500 a month. But they're just going to put that money into bonds. And the only problem with that is that the way I look at these annuity companies is that I would, if I'm going to own bonds, and I believe in having bonds in your overall portfolio in your retirement for safety, for income, but I want to own 50 bonds or 100 bonds, not one bond. Right. And what you're doing by buying an annuity that is this one income source, that is essentially like buying one annuity is like buying one bond. Now, you can buy a super safe bond, you can buy a municipal bond or treasury bond, and you're still not worried about it if you go out of business. But I always have that underlying fear that something could happen to that company. And even if there's reinsurance and there's lots of other guarantees, you don't want to live through, and I saw this in, of course, the great financial crisis, Karen, you do not want to live through your annuity company going through financial trouble. So that is just something to consider about making sure you don't get too, you don't want to rely too heavily, because 15 years down the line, 20 years down the line, 30 years down the line, the world can be a very, very different place. And who knows what happens to this particular annuity company in 20 some years from now, because you're still going to be dependent on this one company for this one income stream. So just, I want you to make sure you remember that and recognize that in this conversation. The question I would say is, how much will it cost? And I don't know if this is an additional cost, or it's really just probably comes in the form of a slightly less starting income when you're 67. Is that how it works for this COLA increase?
Yes.
And can you give me the numbers? What does it cost to do this COLA increase? How much monthly income is it going to cost you?
What the difference when it starts?
Yes.
Okay, it's about it's about
$1,800
a month.
If you don't take the COLA, or you do take the COLA?
If I take the COLA, it's about $1,800 a month.
Got it. So, $1,800.
And that's what I said, the payments catch up when I'm about 80.
Okay, so you have to live to your at least 80.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was one of my thoughts, was to split it.
Meaning saying you do two different versions of the annuity. Half of the annuity gets the COLA, the other half doesn't.
Right.
You know, I very often default back to, when you're having a financial conversation about two paths, there's typically not a right answer and a wrong answer. They're just two different answers, and they might both work okay. And it's, in my opinion, this is one of those scenarios, right? You've got a fork in the road. Both of these scenarios work okay. Because we also don't know where costs are. We've been in a period of time where inflation is very benign for the last 10, 15 years, really 20 years. And we could, and it looks as though it's hard to see a lot of inflation on the horizon because of technology and the world we live in. Things are, for them, except for healthcare and housing, things are getting cheaper. And mm-hmm. in your case, when healthcare does matter though. So we don't know. That's the biggest variable. As long as your house is paid off, when you're 80, Karen, you're going to be doing less. So life is deflationary from a spending perspective. So the cost of living, even though we think of it today in our 50s and our 60s, and we say, well, you know, things are seem a little bit, it's more expensive to on discretionary things like going on a trips and gasoline and an RV or going on a trip to Europe. But when you get into retirement and you're in your 80s, you're doing a lot less of those discretionary things. So not that there's not inflation in the world, there's just not a lot of inflation in your life.
Mm-hmm.
In really, unless you're talking about healthcare. And at mm-hmm. that point, we don't know where Medicare will be, because that program, I can tell you, is certainly has to readjust the numbers over the next 20 years. Today, mm-hmm. if you have Medicare, you have been, now this doesn't count for long-term care facilities for the most part, and there actually is some of that. There actually is some relation to that. But from a just purely a healthcare perspective, Medicare and Medicare, if you have a Medicare supplement plan, it takes care of a vast majority of your healthcare costs. So again, the families I work with in their 80s and they're on Medicare, they haven't seen a massive increase in healthcare mm-hmm. costs because Medicare covers most of that and they've got supplemental policy. So I'm to have a giant cut in income that's almost $2,000 a month just because you're mm-hmm. going to do the COLA, it seems like a lot to me.
Okay.
Now, I haven't reviewed all of your numbers, and we're having kind of a high-level conversation on this, but that seems like a lot. So I think that your thought on having less, maybe you only do half of the COLA on, you split your annuity scenario in two. You have two payments. One's going to increase for COLA. The other one is not. That does start to make a little bit of sense to me. But
yeah,
I would just
spread it out. How many would, I mean, is two enough? Would you go with three different companies? How many? I mean,
yeah, that's goes back to my question or my statement on, do you want to own one bond in retirement?
That does make sense.
Yeah. Or do you want to own 50? Well, you don't want to have 50 different annuities. That's too many. But you do want to have, in my opinion, yes, at least two or maybe even three. If it's going to be, it's a big, sounds like what we're talking about here is a big chunk. I mean, what's your ultimate payment if you did this all in one company per month? $5,000 a month?
For with a COLA or without the COLA?
Without the COLA.
Without the COLA, it's about $7,000.
Yeah, that's a big number. Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't do that with one company. No way.
Okay.
No way,
okay.
Karen. I'm glad we talked this through. I know it was a windy road to get where we were, but I think mm-hmm. if you take anything away from this conversation, one. My main point, and I'm glad we talked this through, don't do such a large amount of monthly income with just one company. That to me would be nerve wracking. Mm-hmm. Split it at least in two different companies, maybe even mm-hmm. three.
Okay.
Get the highest quality insurance companies you can find to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd even consider maybe reducing some of that amount of your overall investment pie. 30% of all of your assets, a little high, but, mm-hmm. I am okay with the fundamental principle of saying, hey, I want an income stream. This portion of my income, maybe it's 20%, not 30, is to some extent very stable, and you know what you're getting. I think to some extent that's a good thing. I've got to run, Karen, but thank you for listening to Money Matters and giving us a call.
Thank you. You've been a huge help.
Have a great rest of your Sunday. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Ryan Ely's coming up with a weekend prize pack. Stay tuned. More Money Matters right here, WSB Radio, straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. Wes Moss here every Sunday morning. Today, 9 until 10 o'clock, Bulldog Brunch starting right here in the 10 o'clock hour. We've got to do a quick weekend prize pack. Ryan Ely, what do we got, my friend? What do we have?
The weekend prize pack is a pair of tickets to see the Trans-Siberian Orchestra's The Ghosts of Christmas Eve returning to Infinite Energy Arena for two shows on December 9th at 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. Tickets are on sale now at infiniteenergycenter.com, produced by Live Nation. Caller number 11 my lucky number, you win this prize pack.
So as we wrap up today, we talked about the this really just tremendous example that I've never shared with you before, and this kind of came up as I'm being interviewed about the kind of the earlier days of my career, but it's fascinating to me to see a Dow of 9,000 in the summer of 98, and 11 years later, the Dow of 9,000 in the summer of 09. 11 straight years for lots of activity, obviously. So up and down and a complete roller coaster. But imagine you effectively drew a straight line from point A to point B where you went nowhere. You didn't go higher, you didn't go lower. So you have a 0% capital appreciation. Take the dividends in that terrible period of time during markets for the Dow, and you had a 31% rate of return, not a zero rate of return. Zero capital appreciation, but 31% when it came to dividends. It equated to 2.5% rate of return. Terrible, nothing to get excited about, but fascinating in the respect that on the surface, you look at a period of time where you thought you might not make money. That's not true. Dividends matter. What did that teach me during my early part of my career? The importance of income. Income matters. It is sometimes the only thing that you're going to really get if you look back, particularly if you look back from 09 and you're a complete stock market investor. You look back over the 11 years in the summer of 09, you said, wow, at least I have my dividends. In a more normal market environment, your dividends add to your total return, which is, of course, what we're all looking for. Find me and the Money Matters team. Easy to do so. We're in Atlanta. We're in Tampa. We're on the West Coast in Del Mar, California. WesMoss.com. My email, my website, WESMOSS.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at Wes Moss Money Matters on iTunes. Follow me on Twitter at WesMoss365. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful Sunday. Stay tuned for Bulldog Brunch right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.